Wait, snapped the prisoner as they turned back toward the stairs. Panic edged his voice. You need Anton. You need me. A devious expression rippled across his face. He licked his lips. If you don't, I'll scream. The brawler didn't move, his hands still on the plate. For a moment, it seemed like the whole jail went still, as if every prisoner therein was waiting to see who would blink first. Then Anton screamed. What's up, you guys? Welcome back to another episode where we last left off. Lee tries to reconcile with Hatham, but finds himself rebuffed by the brawler. As always, if you're not caught up yet, I will have a link to the full playlist down in the episode description, so feel free to check that out, along with a couple of short recap videos just to give you a sense of where we are in the story. All right, that's enough out of me. I will catch you guys at the end of the episode. I'm Josh Call, and this is Last Coliseum. Maybe it was the fatigue setting in, but as the night hours stretched and bled together, the brawler wondered whether one of them might not suffocate. They'd been parked there for hours, and while the holes in the walls that turned the light from without into golden needles offered some ventilation for the men inside, both of their faces were slick with sweat, and Hatham's no-color shirt clung to his frame. The Qadari hadn't said a word in hours. He hardly moved. His hooded eyes were trained on the high walls of the jail and on the dark figures moving about between orbs of torchlight behind the battlements. Hatham had done likewise for the first hour, until the pressure in his temples was almost unbearable. The afterglow of the torches burned purple on the insides of his eyelids long after he looked away. Sleep was out of the question. His legs were needles from the knees down, and anticipation for what came next once the watch changed made his heart gallop. They'd gone over the plan 100 times, poring over the layout of the compound until Hatham could have blindfolded himself and found his way through by touch. The spider's gold had bought them 3 hours inside, the exact duration of the fourth watch, before dawn broke and the city awoke. Come daylight, the parade ground would be bristling with gray cloaks practicing maneuvers. He and the sellsword would as easily try to melt through the thick stone walls as cross the yard without being caught. He wasn't worried. 3 hours was plenty of time. He closed his eyes and tried to ignore the stiffness in his limbs. He'd been in a foul temper coming down from the hanging gardens, and he spent a good hour working his way through the slow martial dance the monks had taught him. Any benefit from the dance had long since been sapped by the endless weight in the carriage. Hatham deliberately pried open his jaw to release the tension and let out a long, slow breath, trying to recover the expansive tranquility that the desert monks had labored to teach him. Some of the brothers had been so adept at the stillness that they could sit cross-legged out in the elements for days without food or sleep, impervious to the scorching heat and bitter cold. He was still working his way down into it, like submerging himself in thick mud, when the sellsword touched his knee. Hatham's eyes snapped open. Up on the wall, he saw a flurry of movement as the men on the third and fourth watches swapped positions. Randall waited several minutes with his hand on the carriage door until the activity had settled to the usual egg-scratching. They heard a distant boom as the relieved watchman withdrew into the garrison. They padded out silently, the Qadari leading, and slipped along the shadows of the west wall. The gate here was much smaller, barely wide enough to fit 2 men abreast, and shadows flitted across the torchlight under the door. Randall knocked once, and the gate slivered open. The guard had his salet on, and he covered most of his face with the edge of his cloak. His eyes were black and beady, and they flitted nervously between the 2 men in the doorway. He nodded and cracked the door a little wider to allow them to pass through.
She's in the fourth cell, upper level.
There was another keeper standing just beyond the gate, holding a few bundles of gray fabric.
Put these on, muttered the first,
passing one to each of them. Both men stripped off their dark cloaks and slipped into the gray. The second guard wadded up the third cloak and pressed it into Randall's hands.
For the girl.
The sellsword nodded and wedged the bundle under his belt.
If you get caught,
we never saw you,
the spider's man finished. Both keepers looked considerably relieved, and they bade them good luck as the one who'd opened the door reached into his pocket and palmed the Kadari a big brass key with teeth on both sides. Too late did he realize that he'd done it with the hand that was covering his face, and he clapped a hand over his mouth and nose as if it might make them forget it. Randall and Hatham ignored him, and they sped toward the two squat buildings hunched on the other side of the parade ground. The yard was damp and gray in the moonlight, deserted except for a few leather and straw fighting dummies that stood like ancient sentinels, stooped and sightless. The brawler felt his neck prickle, the men on the wall watching them jealously as the pair retreated toward the garrison's warmth. They never went inside. They cut along the shadows close to the big building's wall and did a wide circuit around the jail, which squatted on the east side of the yard. It was a broad, square building cut from uniform blocks of cold gray stone. From outside, they could see its three levels by the rows of parallel window slits that offered only a finger's width of moonlight into the cells. There was a small fire crackling on a shallow pit near the entrance, and four keepers were huddled on old chairs with their hands extended over the flames. One of them drew a flask from under his cloak and took a nip before passing it to his comrades. None of them noticed the two cloaked figures who skirted the corner and slipped soundlessly through the open door. The first thing that struck Hatham was the smell, and he fought to keep his gorge down as he clawed for a fistful of his cloak and pressed it to his mouth. The cells hadn't been mucked out in years, maybe ever, and the pervasive stench wriggled into his pores and made his eyes water. It was quiet and still. But if he listened close, he could hear the low chatter of madmen gibbering in their cells. The noise unsettled him. They cut across the wide open area in the center of the chamber toward the stone steps leading up. It reminded him of the grand fighting pits where the Reaper once had ruled, with three galleries ascending toward the building's arched roof like the ribs of some mythic titan. There were no guards besides the ones they'd slipped past by the fire, but occasionally as they paused one of the reinforced cell doors, Hatham felt a prickle on his nape, and he met the black, glittering eyes of one of the inmates, his gaze unblinking and set with hate. The upper gallery was the same as the others, except that the cell doors each had a black iron plate over the small, barred window. Randall's jaw was set. He glanced briefly down at the lower level before crossing to one of the doors and snapping the plate open. The scream of iron sliding over iron made goose flesh course down Hatham's arms, and his eyes flicked to the open door through which a column of the keeper's firelight poured. The sellsword glared for a moment into the dingy cell, then stepped back and snapped the plate closed with another awful metallic screech. The noise set Hatham's teeth on edge. There were close to a score of cells along each of the long walls of the jail. Randall swept his hand toward the doors on the other side of the gallery, then bobbed his head to the brawler. They went to work with silent efficiency. None of the other door plates had been maintained any better than the first, and every time one of them screamed open, Hatham was sure that he'd look down and see a whole troop of gray cloaks pouring in through the doors downstairs. He'd found a lamp that was still burning, and at each door he'd hold it up to the little barred window until he got a decent look at the rag-clad brute huddled on his straw pallet in the corner. Then he'd move on. He didn't find her. Neither had Randall, judging by his tight-lipped expression as the sellsword met him at the far side of the gallery. Hatham muttered a curse under his breath.
"That's not possible."
He raked his gaze across the double row of cells. He could hear an angry buzz rising all throughout the upper gallery.
"Check again.
She's not here, Rigor."
And a second pass over the cell doors might go worse than the first. No telling how many of the cutthroats and madmen had already been woken up by the screech and snap of the iron door plates. Judging by that low, angry rumble that hung heavy on the rank air like rolling thunder, the answer was more than one. Hatham ignored it.
"She has to be."
He crossed to the nearest door and reached for the little iron knob on the plate.
"Check again."
The sellsword didn't move. He remained at the edge of the gallery with his hands curled around the railing, his gaze fixed on the floor three levels down in case the watchman left their fire and came inside. The brawler snapped open the plate, the hairs on his arms bristling at the noise, the lamp raised high with his free hand, and he immediately recoiled from the cell door. The little opening was filled with the ragged, lined face of the prisoner inside, cut to slivers by the black bars. He looked young, but his scraggly beard was completely gray, and his dark eyes shone bright and feverish in the light from Hatham's lamp.
"Keeper,"
the madman hissed, licking his lips. His eyes flicked down to the brawler's tunic.
"No, you're no keeper, so you're not. Where'd you find that cloak there, not keeper?"
He was about to snap the plate closed again when the prisoner added,
"You're looking for someone, are ya?"
Hatham glanced back at Randall. The Qadari shook his head and spat over the side, not looking at him.
"How's about you tell old Anton?"
murmured the prisoner, curling his dirty fingers around the bars.
"Anton's good at finding things, so he is."
Randall muttered something in his mother tongue. Hatham hesitated.
"A woman."
"A woman?"
He licked his lips.
"A woman, he says. And tell Anton, where'd you last see said woman before you lost her?"
Again, the brawler hesitated. He didn't like the way the prisoner said woman.
"They said the fourth cell, top level."
A wide grin broke across his dirty features. His teeth were stubby and moss green, and his fetid breath made the brawler's stomach churn.
"Ah, top level, see? But did you know there's another top level where they keep prisoners? And lucky for yous, Anton can take you right to it."
His eyes flicked down to the thick black lock on the door.
"If you let me out."
Hatham and Randall traded a look. They said it at the same time.
The garrison.
Wait,
snapped the prisoner as they turned back toward the stairs. Panic edged his voice.
"You need Anton. You need me. I can take you right to her."
Hatham reached for the little knob to snap shut the plate. Anton shoved his fingers through the bars to keep it open. A devious expression rippled across his face. He licked his lips.
"If you don't, I'll scream."
The brawler grit his teeth. He looked back at the sellsword, whose eyes flashed with violence. He shook his head minutely.
"We can't."
The brawler didn't move, his hands still on the plate. For a moment, it seemed like the whole jail went still, as if every prisoner therein was waiting to see who would blink first. Then Anton screamed, an awful, shrill wail that sent goose flesh coursing down Hatham's arms. He recoiled from the door on instinct. Immediately, more banshee screams thundered from the other cells, shaking the jail down to the foundation. They smashed themselves against the doors, pounding with fists and feet until the doors shuddered in their frames. Randall cursed and drew back from the railing as the guards charged in through the doors downstairs, blades drawn. Anton wore a look of dark self-satisfaction. He cupped his hands to his mouth and screeched,
"They're here! They're up here! Escape!"
The gray cloaks lurched toward the stairs. Hatham didn't see whether the guards had glimpsed him. Randall lunged past the brawler, drawing the brass key from his pocket and slamming it into the lock. The door yawned open on tired hinges. Anton was standing in the doorway, and he made as if to join them across the threshold. Randall bulled into him, seizing the prisoner by his ragged lapel and shoving him back into the cell. He clapped a hand over Anton's mouth, cutting off his startled cry. Hatham glanced over his shoulder. The clank of the watchman's armored feet was getting louder. He snatched the key out of the lock and slipped into the cell, pulling the door closed behind himself. The cell was cramped and filthy and reeked of shit from the overflowing bucket in the corner. Hatham blew out the lamp and made them all silhouettes in the light from the window slit. And none too soon. The moment the keepers cleared the top of the stairs, they went to work silencing the uproar, smashing on the doors with the butts of their swords, and promising to cut out the tongue of the next man who made a sound. There were two of them. He could hear the others banging on cells a level down. Hatham watched their methodical approach through the bars on the cell door, realizing too late that he'd forgotten to slide shut the window plate. It took several minutes for the gray cloaks to quell the uproar. Even after it had mostly died down, there were still one or two madmen who screeched and gibbered and made the hairs on Hatham's neck prickle. True to their word, the brawler watched the guards. By the time the second keeper came out, red-faced and sweating, the jail was silent but for the muffled whimpers of their hapless victims and the grumbling of the cloaks downstairs.
"Like I was saying,"
the guard grunted, wiping his brow with the corner of his cloak,
"I think you get used to it. Learn to love the sport of it."
The other keeper wrinkled his nose. "Don't know how you could. Knocking heads together is one thing, but
look around you, Danny."
This guard was older, his close cropped dark beard dusted with gray. He swept his hand across the gallery.
"Reapers and baby killers, every one of them. This whole place could fall into the sea and I wouldn't lose a minute's sleep."
The younger cloak, who wore a thick blonde mustachio to distract from his pockmarked face, didn't look convinced.
"Did you hear them today? Taking the girl down to the well." He shivered. "Don't think I've ever heard someone scream like that."
Hatham's heart plunged. He looked back at the silhouetted prisoner. Randall peeled his fingers off of Anton's mouth just enough to allow him to whisper,
"What is the well?"
The prisoner's bright eyes flitted from one to the other. Beneath the sellsword's hand, his jaw was set.
"Promise you'll set me free."
"I don't make promises,"
the Qadari growled.
"You think that was bad?"
the older gray cloak was saying, drowning out whatever else Anton told the sellsword.
"Wait till they start flaying the skin off her."
Hatham grit his teeth and peered through the bars and saw the younger guard crossing the gallery right toward him. The brawler recoiled, tucking himself into the darkened corner where the watchman couldn't see. His shadow fell across the opening, and the temperature in the cell dropped by half. He was grimacing. Hatham held his breath. All it would take was for the keeper to relock the cell, and that would be it. For him, for Randall, for Amatha.
"He's probably working it right now,"
continued the other cloak, clearly enjoying the effect he was having on his comrade.
"Cutting little pieces off her bit by bit."
The blonde guard shivered.
"Stop it. You ever see one after old long knives gets done with them? Now that I'll lose sleep over."
The younger keeper snapped the iron plate closed as he wheeled on the other man.
"You're sick, you know that?"
His comrade grumbled that he was just playing as the pair moved on. Hatham crouched motionless in the corner for several minutes in total silence before he dared crack the door to confirm that the watchman had gone. They couldn't bring Anton with them, but neither could they leave him, lest the prisoner start up his caterwauling again. He turned back to the others.
"Make straight for... what are you doing?"
Anton's grubby hand groped for the brawler. Behind it, his eyes bugged out as the Qadari worked the cord looped around his throat like an angler with his fishing line. He thrashed and juddered, his face already going from purple to black as blood burst in his eyes.
"Setting him free,"
the sellsword replied, his jaw set and eyes far off. When it was done, he stowed the cord in his pocket and dropped the dead man in a heap.
"He didn't know anything,"
he grunted, stepping over the corpse.
"The well is under the garrison. It has to be. We'll have to find the keeper to take us there."
The brawler swallowed against the bile on his tongue and peered out the window slit. The moon was already halfway toward the black horizon. They didn't have much time.
"We should split up,"
he muttered once they had slipped out of the jail and into the shadows of the outer wall. The few gray cloaks there didn't give them more than a passing glance as they strode by. He palmed the sellsword the key.
"You look upstairs."
"And you'll take the well. What if it's reinforced?"
"Then we don't both get caught."
The spider's man nodded. As they slipped through the big double doors into the garrison's empty antechamber, the brawler tried to draw in his mind the map he'd spent hours painstakingly memorizing over the last 2 days.
"Meet back at the west gate,"
muttered Randall as he sped toward the hallway that would eventually meet the stairs going up.
"Try not to die."
With that terse approximation of good luck, the sellsword slipped around a corner and out of sight. Hatham pulled his hood low over his eyes and sped toward the kitchens. The garrison was expansive and laid out like a maze, and now he regretted having spent as much time studying the much simpler layout of the jail as they'd prepared to infiltrate the compound. Fortunately, he could follow his nose, and the welcome smell of a cook fire and baking bread met him as he drew close. The garrison was built over catacombs, and he remembered from the layout that the tunnels under the kitchens had been repurposed into storerooms. If he could find them, he could follow them down, he hoped. The kitchen door drifted open on oiled hinges, buffeting him with the heat rolling in waves off the large stone oven. The countertop was caked with flour and little bits of dough, but the cook was nowhere to be seen. Haytham didn't waste any time. He darted across the kitchen, leaving a trail of boot prints in the flour dusting the floor, and reached for a door to what he guessed must be a storeroom. The door burst open, and the brawler recoiled, pulling his cloak around his shoulders to cover up his civilian's clothes underneath. The cook was wide-bellied and flushed as he balanced a firkin of cooking sherry on his knees. He looked surprised, but not alarmed, as he caught sight of Haytham, and as the firkin started to topple, the brawler lunged forward and caught the top edge before it could smash on the oven-warmed stone floor.
"Thanks,"
the cook grunted as they maneuvered the firkin onto an empty patch of countertop.
"Wouldn't have to do this old bloody onesie if they'd give me a decent damn scullion. Now,"
he mopped his face with a rag and folded his arms across his big belly,
"what the hell are you doing in my kitchen?"
The precious moments he'd spent helping move the firkin had given Haytham time to think, time the sellsword would have spent killing the cook and stuffing his body into the storeroom.
"I was looking for the well."
"The well? And you thought you'd cut through my larder?"
"Captain has a message for..."
He racked his mind to remember what the watchman had called the torturer.
"Old Long Knives."
The cook shivered, just like the blonde gray cloak had at the mention of his name.
"Well, you'd best not keep him waiting then," he said, adding under his breath, "I wouldn't want to be the man what has to wake him."
He trundled over to another door that was tucked between the cupboards at the far corner of the kitchen.
"You won't find it through the larder, but there's a connecting passage from the cellar. Don't touch anything,"
he warned as he drew wide the door. The brawler thanked him and slipped out of the warmth of the kitchen into the chill cellar. The cook produced a small oil lamp and lit the wick.
"Straight through. There's a barred wooden door on your right. Put the bar back down when you come up. If you reach the tun barrels, you've gone too far."
He handed Haytham the lamp.
"I'm going to want this back."
He waved off the brawler's thank you and left him at the top of the steps. The mortared blocks gave way to unworked stone at the foot of the steps, the barrels beginning to materialize through the gloom as the passage wound its slow way under the garrison. The natural hollows that had been hewn in the rock by 10,000 rains were filled with barrels in neat stacks. The cellar had been kept immaculately clean. He saw no dust motes floating in the golden orb of his oil lamp. He noticed the glint of the door's lock and hinges up ahead. Haytham's pulse quickened. He left the lamp on the floor and gingerly slipped the drop bar out of its bracket. The tunnel beyond was pitch black and horribly quiet, and after a moment's consideration, he picked up the lamp and took it with him. Better to risk being seen down there than to risk losing his way. He walked for long minutes down the gently sloping passage, occasionally dipping his head to keep from brushing it against the ceiling. The rising smell of filth from below was as bad as inside the jail, and he fought to keep at arm's length the dread phantoms that danced before his eyes down the black bore of the tunnel. He almost dropped the lamp when he saw firelight reflecting off the wall up ahead. He stowed it in a crack in the stone and crept toward the bend as quietly as he could. The natural cavern formed the nexus between several branching tunnels twisting on toward infinity, supported by a pair of stone columns that some clever craftsman had installed to keep the cavern from collapsing under the weight of the city above. Embers glowed in one of the alcoves, casting long shadows through the dull red glow, the smoke venting through a natural chimney worn in the stone. The cavern was arranged haphazardly with old wooden tables and stools, and one wall held a row of cupboards and a tapped barrel squatting on an old crate. The tables were littered with all manner of savage-looking knives with serrated blades, pincers with jagged teeth, and dozens of little glass bottles and vials, some of them full, some of them empty, some of them smashed on the floor in puddles of dark, viscous liquid. And in the center of the room, unconscious and bleeding and dangling from wrist irons slung through a hook bolted into the ceiling, there was a woman. It wasn't Amitha. Relief crashed through Haytham like a thunderclap. his knees almost buckled, and he steadied himself with one hand on the slick stone wall. She was barely more than a girl, stick-thin and naked, with slick black hair that had been shorn off raggedly at the jaw and coarse patches of black bristles under her arms. Her side was crusted with dried blood from a series of neat parallel slashes that had been cut from her ribs down to her navel, and angry black tendrils spread across her skin in every direction. The brawler grit his teeth and tried not to look at her. She wasn't Amatha. She wasn't his problem. At best, she'd slow him down worse than Anton would have. But as he pushed himself off the wall and tried to bully himself back up the passage, he caught a glimpse of her face. Her nose was broken and her lips were split, and he knew he couldn't leave. He crossed the cavern in three strides, thumbing open the clasp on his gray cloak and draping it around her shoulders, hating himself all the while. Her head lolled against his chest as he lifted her up and unhooked her manacles from the ceiling. "I've got you," he breathed, laying her on the warm stones beside the makeshift hearth before he turned and cast about for a key. He saw a flash of movement out of the corner of his eye, and he looked up just in time to see the blade cleaving through the gloom. He lunged out of its arc and drove his knee up into his attacker's gut. Seizing the figure by his lapels, he flung him headlong over one of the tables, scattering steel torture tools like ninepins and smashing little glass bottles. The thick, acrid stench made him gag, his eyes and throat stinging. A flash of silver narrowly missed him, spraying the brawler with stone flakes as the knife glanced off the wall beside him. The torturer was large and leering, with a misshapen face and meaty forearms that were covered in thick, knotty scars. Hatham saw the second knife an instant before he threw it. He ducked and threw up a hand to protect himself. The blade licked across the back of his hand, and hot blood dribbled down his wrist and forearm. He scooped one of the steel tools off the table at random, a long, two-fingered fork, and sprang forward to sink it into the torturer's wattled throat. The other figure, a beefy apprentice, intercepted him, lunging at Hatham, his cleaver flashing orange in the firelight. The brawler dove out of the way, parrying the stroke and swatting the apprentice backhand with the fork. The apprentice stumbled, catching himself on the wall as Hatham wheeled on old long knives, his driftwood fists chambered. The torturer had scrambled across the room and was fumbling through one of the cupboards for something. Hatham ran at him. He seized him by the back of his nightshirt and hurled him away from the cupboard. Long knives went sprawling, his meaty fist curled around a small leather pouch. Hatham pounced on him. He drove his fist into the torturer's face, his belly, his groin, not feeling the shards of glass that bit through his tunic as they rolled through the wreckage. He pinned the torturer with his hands around his throat and squeezed, veins throbbing in both their temples.
"Let him go!"
The apprentice's voice cut through the haze of battle fire.
"Or I'll cut the throat."
He looked up. The girl was still waking up, her gaze glassy and unfocused as if she'd been drugged. But the apprentice had snatched a hank of her hair and tipped her head back. The cleaver was pressed against her pale throat.
"Let him go,"
he snarled again. The brawler let his grip go slack, and he climbed off old long knives as the torturer coughed and wheezed on the floor. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw knives glinting on the table, and he wondered if he could throw one faster than the apprentice could react. The younger man noticed them too.
"Back against the wall,"
he barked, jerking his head toward the cupboard behind Hatham. The brawler glared hatefully at the apprentice, who'd managed to shield most of his body behind the girl's, and he did as he'd been bidden. Old Long Knives found his feet and found the leather pouch that had been thrown during their scuffle. He watched Hatham curiously through his dark, stringy hair, approaching him cautiously like he would a wild thing.
"Who the hell are you?"
he murmured, pouring a measure of dark, grainy powder from the pouch into his other hand. The brawler didn't answer.
"You can talk now," continued the torturer, "or I can make you talk later."
Hatham grit his teeth and didn't respond. The torturer sighed, then he flung his handful of powder in the brawler's face. It burned in his eyes and tasted like ash, coating the inside of his mouth and throat. He coughed and spat, trying not to breathe the gray cloud that swirled around him. The room spun, and the strength rushed out of him as his bowels turned to water. He dropped to his knees, his vision already fading as he blinked it back and tried to shake off the leaden weight that was pulling him toward the floor. Long knives towered over him, his lips bared in an imperious sneer.
"Bring the girl," he muttered, his gaze still trained on Hatham.
He reached for a stoppered vial of some clear liquid and added a pinch of the powder as the prentice half-dragged, half-carried the girl over. She was still sluggish, and her mumbled pleas went ignored by the both of them. The prentice pinched her cheeks to open her mouth, and the torturer added a few drops of the viscous mixture. Her eyes rolled back, and she slumped over in the prentice's arms. Hatham felt his eyes drift closed of their own accord, and through the fog he fought to find the stillness that the monks had never quite managed to teach him. The brothers who mastered it could slow their heartbeats down to nearly a dead stop, and could drink poison to no effect. It was a hell of a time to try it himself.
"String her back up,"
he heard Longknives say in the distance, as though Hatham was listening from the bottom of a deep well.
"Then put irons on his wrist and ankles. In the morning I'll have questions for our new guest."
He heard the clink of manacles as the prentice looped the girl's wrists back through the hook on the ceiling, and the torturer withdrew into the little alcove where they'd been sleeping. Hatham could feel his heart slowing, though whether that was from the stillness or the torturer's powder, it was impossible to tell. A shadow passed in front of his eyelids. Dimly, he wondered whether the sellsword had found Amitha. He hoped she'd understand.
"Amitha."
Blood roared in his ears, and as the first manacle clicked tight around his wrist, he forced his eyes open. He'd fallen flat on his back, and the prentice was standing over him, the cleaver dangling from his belt. The brawler mustered every last scrap of energy he had, and as the prentice reached for Hatham's other wrist, he kicked him in the eggs. The prentice howled and buckled over. Immediately, Hatham was on top of him, wrestling for the cleaver. It felt like he was swimming through mud. Already he could feel the tendrils of sleep he'd shaken off twisting up around his ankles. He smashed his forehead into the prentice's nose, and hot blood spurted into his eyes. Longknives thundered out of the alcove and dragged the brawler off him. Hatham had managed to disarm the boy, and he slashed wildly with the cleaver. The torturer leapt out of the way of the streaking blade and threw himself at Hatham's knife arm. The brawler clawed at him with his free hand and tore clumps of his greasy hair out by the roots. The prentice lunged at him again with two long, serrated blades that he'd scooped off the table. Hatham ducked the first stroke, but the second swipe bit into his shoulder. He hardly felt it through the tightening grip of the narcotic. He drove his boot into the belly of the prentice and sent him sprawling. Then he turned, with long knives still pinning the cleaver to his side, and threw himself bodily at the wall once, twice, thrice, until the brute slumped off him and dropped in a heap, blood trickling from his scalp. Hatham raised the cleaver for the killing blow. The prentice howled and flung himself at the brawler, knives flashing. Hatham moved without thinking. He swatted the first stroke out of the way, and before the boy could come back for a second, he smashed the big, heavy cleaver down through the top of his head with a terrible red crunch. The knives clattered out of his grasp, and the prentice dropped, the cleaver still jutting out of the top of his skull. Hatham staggered toward the girl, his vision spinning. He tried to catch himself on the edge of the table and sliced his hand to ribbons on a knife that was jutting over the side. Blood pattered over his boots and left a trail of dark droplets on the floor. He clawed for the hook that was threaded through her wrist irons. His hands slipped off the manacles and dropped to his sides like slabs of beef. The lead weight of the torturer's grainy narcotic at last drove him to his knees and then his belly, landing face down in a puddle of blood and glass splinters. He tried to raise his head, tried to speak as darkness swept across his vision.
"Am."
Then, nothing.
Hey
thank you guys so much for listening. Wow, this episode was an absolute monster to record, so I'm going to need to go drink some water. As always, if you're listening on podcast, it's a huge help if you leave a 5-star review. That really allows this story to reach as many people as possible. I hate to leave you guys on a cliffhanger, but I hope that you will come back next week. Same time, same place. I'll see you then.